The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt podcast, bringing you the best voices on the stories and issues that matter. Helping make it all possible is a generous partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Today, the name Steve Case might ring a bell for you. AOL founder and pioneer of the online age, his wife, Jean Case, is the first woman to ever chair the National Geographic Foundation. And Jean Case is the CEO of the Case Foundation, and she's sharp. I think you will enjoy our conversation with me talking to Jean Case about her new book, Be Fearless. Jean Case, welcome to Hugh Hewitt Show. Great to have you.
Thanks, Hugh. Great to be with you. I've really been looking forward to this.
Well, I first want to say you have the greatest job in the world as chairman of the National Geographic Society. My late friend Colonel Ross Mulford loved four things in this world: his wife Diane, his children, the Marine Corps, and the National Geographic Society, where he oversaw the construction of their beautiful building in D.C. And now you're the first ever female chairwoman of the National Geographic Society. That's a big deal.
You know, it's such a privilege for me, Hugh, and I'm really grateful to have the role. Last week we celebrated our 131st anniversary. You know, it was founded in Washington, D.C. And today it's so exciting because each month we reach almost a billion people across the globe through our channels, our magazines, our social media footprint, et cetera. It's a great time at the Society.
Embedded in your book, Be Fearless. And by the way, Frank Luntz has a principle, Jean, which is if you don't say the name of the book seven times in an interview, people won't remember it. So I am going to say Be Fearless at least seven times. So embedded,
I love it. Thank you.
Yeah, the Luntz rule works. Embedded in Be Fearless is a little history of the National Geographic Society. And that's one of the many reasons to get that. When you started out to write Be Fearless, did you intend, I'm going to get the National Geographic Society story in here somewhere?
Yeah, well, it really has inspired me. I mean, the fearlessness and risk-taking is in the DNA of the National Geographic Society, and there's fearless men and women on the front lines, you know, doing great stuff around the globe. So, yes, I couldn't write a book called Be Fearless and not talk about my beloved National Geographic Society.
All right, now, I got to tell you, this is why I'm going to start here. My great-grandparents were German-Americans who ran the Hotel Ashtabula in Ashtabula, Ohio. So when I read about Norma, when I read about Ernest and Anna Baumgarten, I said, I got to ask Jean Case about this because you were bait. I think you refer to yourself as bait at the counter in the hotel.
That's right. Well, as you know, Hugh, in Be Fearless, I write about being born in the town of Normal, Illinois. And my German immigrant grandparents, like yours, ran a hotel in town. And yes, they would put me behind the counter because they realized if I was with my grandmother behind the counter, customers would buy more. And she realized, hey, they're just being nice to the kids, so spend more time back here with me. And so we did.
It's a good story. I also want to talk about Norma Norton, your mom. And here's why. There are a lot of people listening this morning who are single moms with four kids who are struggling. And that had to be your mom when she moved you from Normal down to Florida. And look at you now. And so if they look at their kids, the Be Fearless book will inspire them.
You know, that really is my hope for the book. But I must say, yes, I was the youngest of four kids raised by a single mom. You know, our first principle in the book is make a big bet. And I realized I was her big bet in life. And, you know, how fortunate was I to have a hardworking mom, worked as a waitress at night, just to provide opportunities for me, and the generosity of others as well. But the real reason I wrote the book, Hugh, is because, you know, my work has taken me around the country and around the world, and I see that ordinary people everywhere have great ideas about how to make the world a better place. But they sometimes get stuck thinking they can't be the one to take the idea forward. They think they need special genius or graduating from the right school or whatever it is. So at the Case Foundation, which I run, we did some research 6 years ago to look at the core qualities of people who break through and do great things. And what we discovered were these five principles that I write about in the book. But more importantly, we could debunk this idea that you have to have some superhuman special quality. In fact, people who are closest to problems are in the best position to solve them. And that's really the message of the book. I tried to bring the principles alive through storytelling of people you've heard of and people you've never heard of, and talk about how they had failures and challenges along the way, too, but they kept at it.
You know, I've read a lot of books like this, but what I think distinguishes Be Fearless, a lot of good books, is that the pace with which you move through the stories is appropriate to the age in which we live. There are probably 100 inspiring stories in here, maybe more, maybe 200. I couldn't keep count, and we'll touch on a few of them. But if I had a high school, and my granddaughter can read, but she's only 7. When she's 10, she's going to read this, because I want, there are a lot of them are women, but a lot of them are just all over the place about, I mean, just simple things like Thomas Edison being a fast and effective follower. Not, I mean, he's a genius, but he's a fast and effective follower. You can start where you are and start following other people.
I love that, Hugh. You're exactly right. And, of course, that's the first chapter, the opening of the book, is start right where you are. And I tell a great story about a woman, Dr. Barbara Van Dalen, who was, you know, a sole practitioner doing mental health counseling when the Iraq and Afghanistan wars were raging. And listen, military families needed some mental health support during those years, and we didn't have capacity in the nation through our Veterans Administration and military to help them out. So Barbara started doing one free hour for families a week. And then she got this idea, what if I created a national network to do this? She set out as one person. She didn't even have an assistant when she got started, as one person, and created a national network of thousands of doctors who came together and provided mental health counseling services for military and their families. And today, they've given over $25 million in free health care services. Great example of someone who just said, what do I have that I can bring to the table and make a difference? And look at the difference she made. And Time named her among the 100 most influential people in the world after she did this, just recognizing the impact she had as one individual.
I had not known her story, and I was very impressed. I do know the story because I know Jake Wood. In fact, the only I keep very few awards that are given to me. I have two in my studio, one from Semper Fi Fund and one from Team Rubicon, and I knew Clay. And so back to 2010.
Oh, you knew Clay Shaw?
Yeah.
That is amazing.
And so Clay Hunt.
Clay Hunt, I'm sorry.
Clay Hunt. So when you talk about Jake and Clay and Team Rubicon, I realize that they are now big and everywhere, but they didn't start that way. They had very humble beginnings.
Yeah, it's another great military story, of course, realizing that when our service men and women come home, you know, they go from sort of being called on to do great, bold things every day to sort of just living, you know, a normal life. And many of them wanted to continue their service. So obviously they do that in disaster relief today. And it's another great story of just taking what you have and saying, you know, the people I know, the skills I have, how can I make a difference in this world? And that's what Team Rubicon has done, and it's been great.
I want to compliment you as well and Be Fearless. No sugarcoating. Sometimes you're going to do a face plant, and Play Pumps may be the most important story, you know, counterintuitively, Play Pumps may be the most important story in Be Fearless. So I want you to tell it and why you included it, because a lot of authors wouldn't have the courage to include that.
Yeah, well, I can't write a book with one principle called make failure matter and not acknowledge my own failures. That just wouldn't be very authentic. And that failure was very public for me. The idea of make failure matter is, obviously, if you're trying to do great things, you're going to fail along the way. You know, stare failure and fear in the eye and keep moving. So for me, it was a very public failure of a clean water initiative that we had launched with President Clinton to my right and First Lady Laura Bush to my left to bring clean water to villages across Africa. And we did this for a couple of years. We had a lot of partners. It was very exciting work, but then it started running into some issues, and we realized, okay, we've got a course correct. So we worked on that for about a year. Finally, we realized it was a failing initiative. And so we had this meeting behind glass walls at the office, a board meeting, and said, gosh, you know, what can we do? Is there any way we can just sort of, you know, put this under the rug and pretend it didn't happen? But we knew that was not going to be the case. So I wrote a blog called The Painful Acknowledgement of Coming Up Short, in which I acknowledged the failure of the initiative. And I was surprised by what happened, Hugh, and it really began this Be Fearless work for us. people called and wrote me and reached out and said, thank you for acknowledging failure, because we don't do that enough in this world, particularly when you're out, you know, trying to address daunting challenges. This way we can learn from each other if we talk about it more. So we started doing these fail fests where we bring people together, usually with some wine or beer, and we talk about lessons we've learned through our failures so that we can each learn from one another. And so this, you know, this failure point is a really big deal. And I quote Einstein, who said, failure is success in progress.
That, it's great.
Just think about that. You know, if we could think about failure that way, sometimes it could help us push through.
Now, one of the people you quote in this book, I don't know him personally, but we know each other via email and online exchanges and TV, is Ron Klain. He's one of my favorite Democrats, along with my buddy Mark Guerin, and he led the Ebola czar thing. You talk about how he threw himself into that, but then you transition, and I want people to understand, on a conservative show especially, you were part of the George W. Bush working group on PEPFAR. And I interviewed the president when his book came out, Decision Points, about PEPFAR. I think he's very, very proud of that. But I did not know the Roosevelt Room story. I did not know of all these disparate groups and points of view that came together. I'd like you to tell people about it, because it's a great lesson in linking up with non-intuitive partners.
Yeah. Well, I had the privilege of working with the president on several initiatives, but this one really jumps out for me because PEPFAR, the AIDS relief program for Africa, was just an idea at the time. And President Bush was very wise to bring together people with strong opposing views about where we should go to help solve the issue in Africa. So yeah, in the Roosevelt Room that day, we had people running AIDS organizations, you know, who really didn't believe that you should do abstinence counseling. Then we had the Catholic Church, who didn't believe you should, you know, make condoms part of the solution. We had the private sector, you know, big pharma firms, et cetera. And you could cut that tension like a knife in the room. But ultimately, Hugh, what we realized was tens of millions were dying in Africa, and we needed to find a solution. And so it really was a wonderful thing that people from very opposite sides came together, each giving a little bit, and that enabled the president to have good air cover when he put his program forward from both sides of the aisle. And today, of course, tens of millions of lives have been saved in Africa because of that, what we call reach beyond your bubble. Bring people together who have different perspectives and views. They can cover your blind spots and expand your perspective as well. And I think PEPFAR is a great example of that, and truly, you know, life-saving initiative of President Bush.
And when you tell that story, Jean Case. I'm talking with Jean Case. She is the CEO of the Case Foundation. She is the chairwoman of the National Geographic Society, and she's the author of Be Fearless, Five Principles for a Life of Breakthroughs and Purpose. When you tell the story of the Roosevelt Room meeting that preceded PEPFAR, someone speaks up when deadlock arose. Someone says, hey, tens of millions of people are dying. Do you remember who it was?
I don't remember who it was.
Okay.
I don't remember who the person was. I just remember the room went silent for a long period of time, because I think we all had to check ourselves and say, and, you know, the last principle in the book is let urgency conquer fear.
Yep.
You know, with that idea that every day people were dying and we had to do something about it, you know, I think that really was that moment when we let urgency conquer our fear of accepting maybe some things we weren't totally comfortable with. But, you know, really the idea of the book is that it's ordinary people who do extraordinary things. And we all are going to have those moments where we fear or don't believe in ourselves. You know, the reason I wrote the book and put the inspiring stories in there is you can see anyone or anything that's been done that we know about and call a success today usually started with an ordinary person who could just stare fear right in the face and push past it. And I think that's what we did that day. And that's what we need people to do everywhere. I mean, people all over the world have great ideas. You know, we need all the players on the field with their best ideas to create a better world.
Every day. Now, I love the everyday emphasis. I think you get it from your grandfather pounding on your door at 16, are you going to sleep all day, right?
Yes, at 7 a.m. every morning, if I wasn't up, you know, he was there pounding. Come on, the day's getting on. Are you going to get out of bed or what?
Saturday and Sunday, too.
Yes.
He's a man after my own heart. Honest to goodness, he's a man after my own heart. I also appreciate, as a guy who built the Nixon Library, R.N. often is remembered only for the resignation in Watergate. You point out that RN started the revolution of bringing diversity of women into the government. He also got desegregation going full blast in the South. He also signed in the law, the EPA, the NEPA, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the ESA. But, you know, you don't get a lot of points in some circles for saying Richard Nixon really did it for women.
Man, you know, and when I tell that story, Hugh, first of all, I have so much admiration for the work you did with him and his organizations. But yes, Newsweek said in 1973, perhaps the person that's done more to advance women is Richard Nixon. And, that part of what he did is not known. And, of course, what we're talking about was when he was called in an early press conference he had about why he hadn't appointed more women. I think he'd had a couple hundred appointments and only two or three of them were women. He was sort of dumbfounded. He didn't realize that. And he said, I'll fix that. And so he brought this woman, Barbara Franklin, in to basically make sure that many women were appointed, and they were. But the best thing about that is so many of the women that he brought in went on to really remarkable careers. Carla Hills, Elizabeth Dole, you know, some really remarkable women who went on to serve in cabinets and major organizations as well.
Now, I want to conclude our last 10 minutes here, Jean Case, on the first principle, make a big bet. And the reason is there are a lot of people who listen to this show who are young entrepreneurs. I've invested with a few of them. I know what you and Steve Case do a lot is that you get behind Rise with the Rest, and you find some people, and Lance, I'm talking to you, who are about to bet everything on a new company. And you have a list, I mean, Madam C.J. Walker, Brian Chesky and Joe Gebbia, Rachel Sumuk and Brian Pezeski, Google X, I'm going to go through them all, Jordan Shara, Warby Parker, Jeff Bezos, and my favorite, Sarah Parcak. How did you do the research for this?
Well, you know, I've really been so fortunate. You know, we say at the Case Foundation, our mission is that we invest in people and ideas that can change the world. So I am always out looking around and looking back, because some of those stories, like Madam C.J. Walker, that's 100 years ago, right? She became a hair care empire all on her own.
I confess I'd never heard of her, and that LeBron
is
making...
She was born the daughter of a slave, and she ends up being the first self-made millionaire, female millionaire in the United States, and a great philanthropist. And buildings are named in her honor in Indianapolis today. So it just really, I thought it was so important. And when I get discouraged and think, I don't know if I can do this now, I think about these stories, particularly someone like Madam C.J. Walker. She had so many challenges and so many obstacles in her way, and still she pushed through, which reminds us that anyone can.
Now let's talk about in the modern era. She's an amazing, inspiring figure. LeBron's making a movie about her. Great. But in more recent times, Brian Chesky and Joe Gebbia, everybody knows Airbnb. I believe in Be Fearless, you say they now operate in 80,000 cities in 191 countries, and they started out selling cereal boxes.
Yeah, it's a great story. Actually, what happened is they had moved to San Francisco. They were design students, and they couldn't make rent that month, and they were panicking about getting evicted. So they said, we've got to come up with some fast cash ideas. Well, there was a conference coming to San Francisco that had taken most of the hotel rooms, and so a lot of their design friends couldn't find accommodations. So they rented out air mattresses on their floor for $80 an air mattress, and they included a hot breakfast as part of it. And thus was born Airbnb. That literally was the start of Airbnb. Of course, since that time, they're everywhere. And, you know, they've totally disrupted the hospitality business and industry as two people who had no background whatsoever in any of that. And that's just the other really important point is, you know, I point out that several people who found success are quick to say it was an advantage that I didn't know everything about the business, because I could bring fresh ideas and not be told, no, that doesn't work here.
What I loved about that story is that the venture capitalist at the end, who gives them their first serious round of funding, gives it to them because they are indefatigable in trying to raise their money.
He says, you guys are like cockroaches. You won't go away.
Yeah, that's a high compliment if you're trying to get a business started,
I think. That is a compliment for an entrepreneur.
All right, Warby Parker, why do glasses cost so much? As someone who's worn glasses since the third grade, I'm always astonished by how much they cost. You tell the Warby Parker story. Warby Parker is just a couple of names from a Jack Kerouac novel. But tell us about how it got started.
Sure. Well, you know, and the founders are dear friends of mine. Neil Blumenthal particularly had worked for a nonprofit called Vision Spring in Africa that provided low-income eyeglass solutions for the poor. So when his friend at Wharton lost his glasses and needed a pair, they realized how messed up the glasses industry was. It was a near monopoly. It cost too much. It took too long. It was highly inconvenient. You had to go somewhere. And they said, can't we come up with a better solution? So they devised this idea of selling glasses online. And as you might imagine, everybody's like, that's never going to work. That's a dumb idea. Well, not only did it work, but, you know, they had something like 20,000 orders before they really had the inventory or the capital to put into the business. It's a great story, but the best thing about Warby Parker is they took what they knew, which was the great need for low-cost eyeglass solutions, particularly among the poor. And now today, if you buy a hip, you know, major leading brand of Warby Parker, a pair of eyeglasses goes to someone in need, and so far they've given away 4 million eyeglasses. They train up
remarkable
entrepreneurs who sell them at low cost.
Now, Be Fearless also has my favorite entrepreneur. I own Amazon stock. I always tell people that. It's the only single stock that I own because I'm not smart enough to pick stocks, but I can see a big, big wall and a big, big wide moat, and I know Amazon's going to. But you tell some Jeff Bezos stories here. It hadn't been easy for him either. He's an advocate of having what you call a failure resume.
Oh, you better believe it. But also, I think he's one of the greatest stories of the American dream. Jeff's mom was a pregnant teenager in high school, okay? And when a few years later, she married a Cuban immigrant, and his parents are wonderful people. But really what makes Jeff Jeff, and he's been a dear friend for a long time, is, you know, he went in summers and worked on his grandparents' farm, and his grandfather would just put him, like, in the workshop and say, fix this, or have him do kind of hard labor around the farm. And Jeff grew to understand, man, you can actually learn how to do things you're not sure you're good at. And, of course, that's the spirit he brought to Amazon. And, you know, he's constantly taking risks, constantly changing that business. But it's obviously served him well, and it's a very successful company today.
Now, I do have to question one assertion. You assert that the city of Normal, where you grew up, had the first Steak and Shake. I think Warren, Ohio, had the first Steak and Shake. Are you sure about that?
I'll take you on that one. History's on my side. I got the facts.
All right,
it was Illinois, and I have a picture of it.
You went back, because Steak and Shakes are definitely a Midwestern thing. You went back to Normal to write the book, Be Fearless. Why?
Well, you know, it was actually my husband's idea that I do that. I got an Airbnb, but Steve said to me, you know, you can't work like you work and write a book. You've just got to go, like, sequester yourself. And he said, you should go to your hometown and reconnect with your past to do this. And that's exactly what I did. I went all by myself, and I spent a few weeks just waking up every morning, writing until I went to bed. Now, I did take some breaks for walks and bike rides, but generally speaking, and it was important because I think it kept me really grounded. And, you know, I write in the book that I asked big questions and sought big answers. And spending that time alone, but back in the place that formed and shaped me in the nation's heartland, I think was just important to ground this book.
Well, you've been very generous with your time. I want to conclude on a very profound exchange that you had when you were doing Out on a Limb. And let me preface this by saying, I will never do that. I would throw up and fall off. I would never do that.
Well, that's why you have to do it, Hugh.
I will never do that. But when I read it, at the end of it, the guide instructor asked the group, you'll have to describe it, do you think you have chosen things you know you will be good at in life? Would you explain both what that setting is and why that question matters so much?
Sure. Well, what you're talking about is an experience where I climbed a telephone pole and then had to walk across a telephone pole 30 feet in the air. I was belayed, so I knew if I fell, I'd be caught, but my mind didn't necessarily know that. So anyway, when I got down, she did say this. She asked that very question, had I done things that I mostly knew I was good at? I had never considered that. But as I pondered it, when she asked the question, I realized, you know what? She's right. As I've gotten older, I had moved further and further away from jumping into things I wasn't sure I could do. And so I set out that day, really, to live the rest of my life making lists of things I can't do and chasing after them, trying them. And, you know, I was successful. So martial arts was an area I thought I would never be able to accomplish anything. But I set out to get a black belt in Taekwondo, and I did in my 40s. So it was an important moment for me, and I really I can't recommend it highly enough to think about that in your own life and make a list about some things you really think you can't do and go try them. I think we all want to get out of our comfort zone. And, you know, great things really don't come out of the comfort zone. They come from when you're uncomfortable, when you're pushing yourself. And that's really the message of the book, too.
It is a great, great message. Be Fearless, a terrific read, Five Principles for a Life of Breakthroughs and Purpose. Follow Gene Case on Twitter, at Gene Case, J-E-A-N-C-A-S-E. I don't even know how you got that, because it's a very easy-to-remember Twitter handle. And go to Amazon, Be Fearless, help Jeff Bezos out at the same time. By the way, your friend Jeff is going to screw up life for all of us who live in Northern Virginia with the traffic, you know. I hope he's going to fix that, too. But
well, but he's going to bring a lot of jobs.
35,000 of them. You betcha.
Yeah,
we're happy about that. Be Fearless, available now. Congratulations, Gene Case, and thanks for being so generous with your time.
Thanks so much, you.
Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you enjoy your podcast, take a moment, tell a friend to subscribe today.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.